Our true crime podcast deals with sensitive issues, including some that little ears shouldn't hear. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Getting ready for the big holidays coming up here.
Thanksgiving and all that.
Yeah,
we just passed Thanks
Halloween.
Yeah.
Had a good time on Halloween, did you?
Sure.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
We always love Halloween.
Yes,
my oldest dressed up as a trash can.
Which was super cute.
And my youngest was a Southern Belle.
And if you know her two girls, that totally makes sense with their personalities.
Yeah, pretty much.
Very cute.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, today we are featuring our first ever two-part episode.
And this is the second half.
This is part two of Dale Nelson. Jen, why don't you do a quick little wrap-up of what we did in episode one so people can kind of familiarize themselves with this.
Sure. Canadian Dale Nelson, 31 years old in 1970, spent his entire day drinking. Then, before he went home, he stopped off and he killed 8 people.
That is unbelievable.
Right now, we're at the part where the police have tracked Dale's car. They have found the body of Tracy Wozzeck, but they have not found Dale or the other girl, Kathy St. Armand, that he had kidnapped from the other house.
This is seriously one of those tales, I guess, that's just hard to believe. I haven't quit thinking about it since you've started it.
Oh, this is stuff nightmares are made of.
It truly is.
It really
is.
That's why this was very difficult to do.
Very. So, needless to say, I'm kind of excited to get to it and see what happens because I don't know. So I'm with everybody else out there in pod world listening. So let's hit it and see what happens.
The next morning, the manhunt continued. They went back into the area where his car was found. The only thing that was discovered was a leg to a pair of pajama bottoms and a rope that was attached to 2 trees. Police guessed by the position of the rope someone had been tied to the trees that night. 4 p.m. on Sunday, Mountie Officer Finch had taken Dale's wife, Annette, back to the cabin to see if anything was missing. She was able to determine that there was a can of peas gone and a half bottle of aspirin.
I would never notice that stuff gone in my house.
You wouldn't, but they didn't have a lot.
Small house, so I guess you would
small
notice.
Small house, exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
While they were inside, a crime scene investigator was looking around the house. He noticed that a plastic window covering had been cut with a sharp knife. Do you remember those? You put the plastic around the window to keep the drafts out. He ran around the back to check outside and discovered fresh footprints. Ugh. So he followed them, and around 100 feet from the house, he saw Dale lying behind a log. This crime scene investigator could tell by the sound of his breathing that he was alive, but he was sleeping. Dale's gun was next to him, but there was no sign of Kathy.
That's not a good sign.
And it looked like he had set himself up for, he was ready for a shootout, is basically what it was. Because he had a perfect view to the house, and his back was to brush. The Mounties took Annette Nelson back to safety. At about 5 p.m., the police surrounded the area where Dale lay. They had orders not to shoot unless Dale shot first. Gonna take him alive. Once everyone was in position, they called on the bullhorn. Dale Nelson, you are surrounded. Stand up and put your hands in the air.
I would have just shot him.
No answer. They said this 2 more times over the loudspeaker. Dale did not budge. And that's when they decided to send the hero.
I need a hero.
Hero. Officer Count.
Aw, Officer, count me in.
He was a German shepherd.
Oh, that'd be even better.
With his teeth bared and a loud, menacing growl. Count leapt on Dale's chest, pinning him to the ground.
Good.
Officer Count's handler came behind him and then cuffed Dale.
I love doggies.
Dale didn't even fight. In fact, he was like in a daze, just totally not even there.
Still asleep.
They read him his rights and walked him to the police car. The police asked Dale where Cindy was. He said that if the police gave them water and cigarettes, he would tell them. After he was given water and cigarettes, the police asked if Cindy was dead. He told them yes, and he drew a map on where they could find her body. By 5:50, Officer Count and his handler, Constable Madsen, were in the same area where they found Tracy's body. The entire area had been searched barely 10 hours before, and nothing was found. But that's where Dale's map had taken them. So they went further into the woods, and about 160 feet was Cindy Armand's body. Mm. She was laying face down with her t-shirt pulled up around her body. A broken wine bottle lay beside her. Her back had one deep puncture stab wound, and as Constable Madsen leaned closer, he noticed the back of her hair was matted with blood. Once Dale had been arrested and brought into the station, he was stripped of all of his clothes so they could be examined. He was given a blanket to wrap around him, and they began to question him. The entire time while Dale was interrogated, he was shaking and his breathing was very labored. When they asked him if he went to the Wasik's house on Friday and what he did in the Wasik's house, he answered, "I don't want to think about it. I mean, you know already. It must have been that LSD. Dale admitted to hitting Shirley with a fire extinguisher, but didn't know if he had killed her or not. He also admitted to killing Tracy. He admitted to going to the Phipps house and killing them. And when they asked if he took Cindy or killed her there, he told him he killed everyone in the house. After a while, he didn't want to talk about it anymore. And when they asked why, he's like, "It ain't pleasant to think about. It's not pleasant to think about. It's not even
you
pleasant.
You flip and did it. Why wouldn't he? Like, so he really,
When Dale was in his cell, he was very quiet. He mostly paced the floor. He smoked heavily and he slept. He slept a lot.
Yeah, he's coming off his drugs.
Occasionally, his wife would visit. A few times when Dale spoke with the guard, he asked him if they would let him plead guilty. And when the guard didn't answer, Dale went back to sleep. And then a little while later, to the same guard, Dale said, "You are all brave. I could have killed 10 of you if I had wanted." Then once the guards changed shifts, he told the new guard, "It's funny how you all guard me all the time. My wife must have told you that I was going to do myself in. That would be a fitting punishment, don't you think?" Despite every citizen in the Creston area thinking Dale should have been shot on sight.
I agree.
Of course, the law states that we can't, but we're a civilized nation.
I'm assuming that they wanted answers. They thought that they wanted to talk to him and find out why instead of have it be forever unknown.
Dale was arraigned on September 8th, 1970. He was initially only charged with Shirley Wasik's death. And since there was a new amended criminal code at the time, the murder of 8 innocent people was only recognized as non-capital murders. That means they couldn't be given the death penalty. If Dale would have killed a police officer or a prison guard, then they could have given him the death penalty. But since he killed only innocent people due to the criminal code, he could be given life. The courtroom, of course, was packed with locals and newspaper reporters. Dale was brought into the room between 4 Mounties, and he was heavily guarded. They also had placed other police officers around the room.
It's like Hannibal Lecter.
Well, just in case they didn't want any vigilante there shooting Dale in the courtroom.
Yeah.
So the arraignment was very short. The staff sergeant explained the details of the arrest, and a local doctor told the court of his interview with Dale the day before. He stated that he didn't get much information out of Dale because Dale was extremely depressed and had developed a negative attitude about the interview.
He developed... It's not funny.
He
developed a negative attitude about the interview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Poor Dale. Poor thing.
Yeah, poor baby. The doctor did state that, in his opinion, he believed Dale to be mentally ill. So then the judge then ordered a 30-day remand, and Dale was sent to a correction center in Vancouver. Since, like we stated before, Dale was very poor, they were given legal aid, and they asked for Michael Moran. Moran had a lot of experience defending murderers and was very knowledgeable about how things worked in this little small town. Mm-hmm. He had been working there for about 20 years, and he could be very persuasive with the local jurors. Moran did get a lot of backlash for taking Dale's case. He said he got a number of poison phone calls. When Moran was asked why he took the case, he said, "Well, no defense counsel has the right to refuse the request of the accused person."
I struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you? Like, I think about being an attorney and you have to defend somebody. Everybody has a right to be defended, but you know that they are guilty.
Dale was a model inmate in the correctional center, very quiet, and he was put in an observation wing. While in his cell, Dale turned to religion. The only people he would really want to talk with is the prison chaplain. And he would also write letters to his family. But mostly, Dale was interviewed by more police and underwent lengthy psychiatric evaluations.
Did his wife still stay with him? Like, did she return? Do you know? Did she return letters? Did she support him, I guess? Or did she?
She showed up at his trial
she
later.
She did. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. I think that'd be a deal breaker for me.
Killing your family?
Yeah, but I think so. Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
There wouldn't be much left to talk about.
Mm-mm. The very first day Dale was at the correctional center, he spent 3 hours with a court-appointed psychiatrist. That doctor's name was Dr. Roderick Whitman. Whitman found Dale to be deeply depressed, very reluctant to speak about the night of the murders, and he was still having labored breathing. After his first interview, the doctor gave his tentative conclusion that Dale may have been seriously ill at the time of the murders. I would think so. And this was based on Dale's comments regarding his thoughts, like, immediately after the murders. Like, he was asked why he tied Shirley's hands behind her back, and he said, oh, I had no reason to do it. I had no reason to do anything. It seemed like it wasn't even me. It seemed like I was standing there watching someone else, yet I knew I was doing it, and it was me.
That definitely
kind of like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah. So he definitely was not in his right mind.
When Dale spoke about watching the three officers go into the Wasick's house, he said, I hid in the bush and watched the officers go in and out and seriously thought about shooting them. And when he asked why he thought that, he replied, oh, I don't know. It just seemed like a normal thing to do. Then again, when Dr. Whitman brought up the shooting of Ray Phipps, Dale stated, I didn't want to shoot the guy, but for some reason it seemed necessary. Dale also told the doctor about some hallucinations he had while he was in his cell at both the facilities. One hallucination was a swarm of mosquitoes buzzing about in his cell. There was another one of a large dog sitting on a cot. Even though Dr. Whitman thought Dale was mentally ill after the first interview, he didn't want to give his final conclusion. He conducted four more interviews with Dale, and he also reviewed notes from the others at the correctional center that were about Dale. And he went over notes of the other psychiatrist that had handled Dale after his suicide attempt. He even hired another psychiatrist to come in to interview Dale. So he was like trying to get all the bases covered here. By the end of the whole entire process, Dr. Whitman came to the conclusion that at the time of the murders, Dale was sane and he was fit to stand trial. Dale's lawyer, Mr. Moran, also attained a psychiatrist, a Dr. Robert Holliday. He also found that Dale was deeply depressed. Seems to be a trend.
That doesn't make you insane, killer, though.
Right?
Yeah.
Dale was depressed, but he was still able to recall all the events of what happened on that night. Dale told Dr. Holliday about a bunch of other events that he was involved in due to his hostile and aggressive behaviors. Dale also talked about into his suicidal tendencies and about how he felt persecuted. He even went into the fact about how much he hated women. After speaking with Dale and going over Dale's clinical records, Dr. Holliday concluded that Dale was mentally ill. Later, each of these doctors would be used in the trial. Also, it should be told that after the third interview with Dr. Whitman, Dale wrote a long letter. The letter would later show how rational his thought process was while hiding in the bush. Camille, you want to read the letter? Give me a break from talking.
To whom it may benefit. In the past, I have looked upon the RCMP as a spineless, backstabbing bunch of jesters. I have recently read in a well-known weekly magazine an article which I felt substantiated this. I have even taught my children to fear and ridicule the Mountie, putting before him every stumbling block at my disposal. I truly felt that these men were a disease to their forefathers and founders. I have heard tales of where in previous manhunts they have been afraid to venture into the woods to seek an armed man. However, I have recently had occasion to discover the true quality and courage of these men in scarlet coats, for I myself was a hunted man who eluded these men, sometimes sitting and watching their dauntless devotion to a duty in which they did not hesitate. For some years now, I have been an avid gun hobbyist, and I have attained a reputation of an avid marksman who could hit a soup can at 50 paces, every shot without sights on my rifle. So these men knew what was in store for them when I was overtaken, which was inevitable, as they had dogs tracking me, and I was armed with a high-power rifle with 9-power scope sight. When I grew weary of running and picked my spot to settle down to fight, it was in the thick underbrush, where visibility was no more than 20 feet. I was determined to die in that spot. When I heard the Mountie calling for my surrender with the aid of a bullhorn, I kept silent, for I thought they feared to venture further. Then I heard the man in charge instruct his men to advance, but to hold their fire, and fire only if fired upon. As I lay with my rifle at hand, I could not bring it to bear, but could only stare with fascination as a corporal walked calmly through the bush toward me, the gun, which he aimed at me, not wavering, nor his footsteps faltering. These men treated me with naught but courtesy and devotion while I was confined there and in transit to Alcala. So I appeal to all the citizens to take off your hats to these men, as they would be an honor to their forefathers. He's something else. So he's thanking them, basically saying, I'm so smart and I'm better than you, but I showed you a little compassion. And so now thank you for showing me compassion. Oh my God. And I notice he makes no mention of the people he killed.
No.
Or why he did it.
No. While Dale was being interviewed by the doctors, he was still being interviewed with the police. They wanted answers about Dale's first comment about the LSD, right?
Obviously.
They asked him point blank if he took LSD, and then Dale said, I was going to speak in private to a couple of constables to see if I could clarify that I had not taken LSD. My wife is saying that the Mounties were still trying to get the evidence from Darcy Bolton. She said that they weren't able to pin anyone who had given me LSD. They weren't able to make progress, they meaning the Mounties. After my mind cleared up, I didn't want an innocent man persecuted for something he hadn't done. Darcy came into the bar and Dale had asked him if he had any weed.
Right.
And Darcy said, no,
right.
But I'll take you home. The police are thinking that Darcy Bolton is the one that supplied Dale LSD.
Mm-hmm.
So now Dale wants to claim that he did LSD. He's now saying he didn't do LSD. And to not go after Bolton, here's how the interview went. Police, so you didn't take LSD? No. Police, what are the details of the matter concerning LSD? Dale, sometime in the afternoon before the crimes of which I'd been accused, or I was drinking in a hotel with this guy. Police ask what guy? Dale says, Darcy Bolton. Where at? Kootenay Hotel. I asked if he could get me a couple of tabs of LSD. Well, he said he could try and that I could contact him later that night and see. And the police said, see what? Dale said if he was able to obtain it, and he would be able to deliver it that night.
So he was purposely out looking for drugs even after he had drank himself silly that day, basically.
This was at the beginning of the evening.
Yeah,
this
was, but he was buying all that alcohol, and then he ran into Darcy, and he was looking to even get higher, right? Like, he wanted weed after drinking.
This was still at the very early, this was only at the second bar he was at.
Oh.
This was before he even went to get his gun.
Okay.
Police asked Dale, how long did you drink with Bolton? And he said, I couldn't really say, about a few hours. And then the police asked why he asked for LSD. And he said, well, because most of the young guys around here smoke marijuana and they're able to purchase acid. So at least they claim to. Then the police asked him if he had done LSD before. And he had said yes. And they asked how many times. And Dale said, the only reason that I'm telling the police any of this is because he didn't want an innocent man to be prosecuted. And I don't want to go through all this again because it'll come out through the doctors.
Even if Darcy gave him LSD, he did not force Dale to go murder people. So what, he would have a drug charge maybe, but prosecuted an innocent man to be prosecuted.
For drugs. For selling Dale LSD.
Yeah, but he didn't force Dale to go kill 8 people.
No, but you don't force people to buy your drugs either.
No, but he wanted drugs.
Yeah, but it's illegal to sell drugs.
Lots of things are illegal. That doesn't mean people don't do it. What I'm saying is, let's look at the big picture here. Like, a guy's going to get in trouble for selling LSD, or a guy's going to get in trouble for murdering people.
They're both going to get in trouble.
But I'm saying that...
1970s Canada.
But it looks at where Dale's mind is, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. he should be more concerned about...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You see what
there.
I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, he's concerned about his friend who sold him illicit drugs, who may or may not have allegedly, or as Jen likes to say... supposedly sold him illicit drugs,
mm-hmm.
when the fact of the matter is, really, LSD doesn't make you murder people, number one, and number two.
No, drugs don't make you do anything that you wouldn't do otherwise.
Exactly.
The police asked Dale, did you tell the police that you used LSD on the date of the crimes? Dale said, yes, I told them nothing else. I wanted them to think that LSD had caused me to commit these crimes instead of insanity. Then they asked, prior to the murders, when was the last time you took LSD? Dale said, well, LSD, it would be around the middle of January, first part of February, something like that. And then the police asked, once again, had you taken any other drugs prior to the murders? Dale said, no. I don't believe so. So in December, right after Christmas, the attorney general sent their psychiatrist, Dr. Joseph Thomas, to interview Dale. Dr. Thomas had a lot of experience probing criminal minds. He had examined over 300 accused murders and scores of dangerous sex offenders in his career. And he also taught forensic psychiatry. After Dr. Thomas examined Dale, he went through all the police records, all the mental evaluations. Dr. Thomas strongly concluded that Dale was not suffering from a mental illness on the night of the crimes. He believed Dale was a sociopath, and Dr. Thomas found no evidence to suggest Dale didn't understand that his actions that night were wrong. On February 1st, 1971, Dale's trial would start. Due to the strong opinions of Creston, that's the town that they were from, the venue was moved about 70 miles northwest. No media was allowed in hopes not to taint the jury. And it's so weird because today,
mm-hmm.
everybody would have known about this.
This story would have been
huge. That's all we would have heard about. And it would have been the trial of the century or something the media would totally pounce on. But back then, nobody knew.
Yeah.
This was 70 miles northwest of this town where the trial was.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had heard about it before.
Even at the, in that, really?
Yeah.
Well, nobody had heard about it. No internet, no cable TV. So that's a thing.
No, but I mean, it wasn't even really in the newspapers.
But that's shocking.
That's like an hour away and nobody knew.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Now, the prosecutor of this case, his name was T.G. Bowen Colthurst.
That's a mouthful.
He had a difficult time going on how to do this trial because an indictment of all 8 counts of murder is going to confuse the jury.
Yeah.
Because they have to list them. In fact, even if he had to read it out loud, it would be tedious. And expecting the jury to digest everything, he didn't think they could do it.
Yeah.
It would be really hard. So he didn't want to put all 8 counts of murder on. But even if he put, you know, half of that, it would still confuse the jury.
Yeah.
And he was also worried that just the depravity of the crimes alone would persuade the jury to think that nobody in their right mind would ever do such horrible acts. Because you have to remember, if he's only going for non-capital punishment, which is a life sentence. If the jury decides that guilty by reason of insanity, he would be put in a mental hospital where he could get out once they deem him fit. Plus, there was also the issue of the reference to LSD. If the jury accepted that Dale took the drug, then that would have reduced his ability to tell right from wrong, giving him manslaughter. So he didn't, it was kind of confused.
I think also taking into consideration of this case in the 70s, that was sort of post the hippie movement. And so the adults, the generation that wasn't cool, was all freaked out about LSD and drugs and weed and all that dope, that bad dope, you know what I mean? And they would liken LSD on the same level as weed, which is totally not the case.
So the prosecutors decided to focus on only one murder from each house. So they decided to focus on Tracy Wasick and Kathy St. Armand.
And those are the babies?
Those are the baby girls.
That's good. That's what I would have done too, I think.
Because it gets you right in the heart, man.
Sure does. I don't send him away forever.
Upon speaking with Dale's lawyer, Moran, Bowen Colehurst asked if the defense would agree on certain facts so that the prosecution didn't have to produce formal evidence. So the prosecutor turned to Section 562 of the Criminal Code of Canada, and that states, let me read it here, where the accused is on trial for the indictable offense, he or his counsel may admit any fact alleged against him for the purpose of dispensing with proof thereof. Legalese, that's nice, right? Well, basically what it meant is the prosecution is not required to produce formal evidence of any fact that is admitted by the defense. The defense agreed. In return, the prosecution had to agree not to leave out any of the disgusting, gross, bizarre things that happened that night. Because the defense only had the insanity plea, everybody came into agreement, and Moran started to write out everything that Dale admitted to. The big trial started on March 22nd, 1971, in Cranbrook. Dale just turned 32, 3 days before the trial started. Everybody expected this huge crowd to be in the courtroom. Nope. Not one press photographer.
Really?
No. No one was interested in the murders.
It was such a small town that it...
Nobody had heard of it before. So instead of running Dale and his rampage, the Canadian news, they were just covering the Manson murders. The Manson murders happened at the same time, so that was the big scoop. And this part, the book kind of made me laugh, because when they talked about the judge and how serious his case was, this is what was in the book. With a single glance, Justice Aikens implied that the sensational nature of this trial would in no way undermine the dignity of his courtroom. No intrusive murmuring from the public seats, and he would not tolerate from either counsel the type of flamboyant behavior that often colors courtrooms proceedings of the United States.
Good for him.
Good for him.
Put those people in shape, even though
we're
going to
do it the Canadian way, and we're not going to be like those Americans all goofy and stuff.
Boy, the Americans are.
When the court was asked how the defense would plea, Dale's lawyer informed the court that they did not want to enter a plea of any type. No plea whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you do that?
They did. So the judge entered a not guilty plea.
For him, on his behalf.
Dale wanted to plead guilty, and he wanted to be incarcerated. And Dale was appalled by his actions, and he was scared that he would do it again.
Really? See? LSD had nothing to do with it.
Now, normally, when prosecutors open a trial, they give short synopsis of what happened and why the defendant was being charged. The prosecution told the entirety of the night's events.
This is the part I'm not so sure I can hear, but okay.
I'm not going to go through all of it.
Okay,
and this is where it gets really gross and disgusting, so if you guys want to tune this out, that's fine. I don't blame you. I wish I could have tuned it out. I really wish there was something called mind bleach. It was discovered that Dale went into Charlene, who remember was 8, and Tracy, who was 7. He went into their room, and he laid his rifle by Charlene's head, and he choked her. Charlene fought him off. And then he performed oral sex on her, an 8-year-old. It's disgusting. No. It's gross. The lawyer, the prosecution, used the term cunnilingus, mm-hmm. right? That's the, I don't want to say medical term. And when he did, he felt he totally lost the jury. Like, their face went blank.
Did they not know what that
meant? They did not know what that word meant. He had to describe what that was. And he didn't use oral sex. He described what he did to that poor girl.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, that shocked everyone.
Totally.
I mean, just knowing that he performed that is awful, but then to not know that word.
So then that begs the question, were the jury, I mean, I guess it's rural and it was a small town, but, I mean, that's maybe a one or two or maybe three people on the jury wouldn't know what that meant, but I'm not sure which thing bothers me. Well,
it all bothers me. It almost makes you wonder. Well, we'll get into more later because there's another thing that's kind of shocking, too. Then the prosecution went on to describe how Dale asked Charlene to help kill Tracy.
No.
Dale walked over to where Tracy was lying on the bed and choked her until she lost consciousness. Mm. Dale then turned to Charlene and asked her to come with him to the kitchen to help pick a sharp knife. Then once Charlene picked out a sharp knife, he kind of grabbed her by the back of the neck and forced her back into the room. And then he choked Tracy again. And then he cut her abdomen open.
In front of her sister.
In front of Charlene. Dale then looked at Charlene and told her to cut open Tracy's stomach, her own sister.
See, he's definitely mentally ill, but he's sane. He's sane enough to do that, to put that, I don't know. He's a whole nother kind of,
Charlene, of course, refused. So Dale did it.
In front of her. Poor little
and
girl.
Then this.
Oh, no. What?
Dale put his face into the cut and ate the undigested cereal that was in Tracy's stomach. Dale then asked for a rag to wipe his face, and Charlene gave him a doll's dress.
What? Maybe he really is mentally ill. Right. That poor baby girl. The one, I mean, both of them, but the one to have to witness that?
It's unreal.
See that now?
I had no idea until I read this book, and then I'm just floored. Are you crying?
I think, man. See, I was thinking that he was... He's got to be more mentally ill than I thought.
Something was not, up.
You know what I mean? That's...
Second day of the trial, 9 witnesses were called to testify. They were the ones at the bar. Everybody said that Dale seemed relatively sober, and he didn't show any sign of mental distress or insanity. In fact, nobody even thought he was drunk.
And he did drink so much, it's almost like his system wasn't... I don't know. Okay, I'm still thinking about that god-awful thing earlier. Sorry.
On the third day, a crowd started to form in front of the courthouse. Seems that there was only one small town newspaper, and it had published all the bizarre details of the trial.
Bleeds it leads.
Most of the people were really upset that the newspaper published such horrible things, but this newspaper stood their ground and said, it's the reporter's function to report accurately on everything that's in the courtroom.
As a former journalist, I agree on that. However,
I mean, they were getting calls from the Catholic priests, from all sorts of...
They thought he needed to be exorcised?
No. I'm talking the newspaper was getting calls about publishing this and how it was...
The priests were saying
there's no need to publish all this kind of stuff. We don't need to hear about it. While some people were angry about the paper, others were like, let's hurry up and get to the courthouse and let's see if we can go in. So on day 3, the first witness was John McKay. John McKay is Maureen McKay's ex-husband. Mm-hmm. So John McKay was barely on the stand when the judge called a voir dire, which is basically a trial within a trial. The jury leaves the room and the judge hears questionable evidence and decides whether or not that evidence should be said in front of the jury. Once the jury was safely out of the room, McKay told of an incident that happened 8 months earlier. Around the beginning of the year of 1970, Dale had taken LSD, gone berserk, and attacked one of his friends. During the counsel arguments, the judge heard that this incident could be relevant to why Dale committed the murders because there's a medical theory that within a year of taking LSD, a flashback reaction can be induced by alcohol. Dale could be reliving that violent LSD trip. The judge decided that this testimony would not be brought to the jury, and the matter of fact, the jury was not to be informed of the LSD at all. So on day 5, prosecution submitted an audio of Dale's first police investigation, which kind of bit him in the butt, because within minutes, you heard Dale cry, it must have been the LSD!
Right. Mm-mm.
So, and that was the first time that the jury had even heard about the LSD, and many didn't even know about the drug at all, much less its side effects, mm-hmm. the jury. Prosecution later that day submitted the recording of Dale denying taking the drug to make up for the accident. And of course, both attorneys weren't thrilled with the LSD being mentioned in the trial. Prosecution wasn't happy because it would prompt the jury into giving Dale manslaughter. Mm-hmm. And the defense thought that bringing up drugs to a very conservative jury would make them kind of hostile toward mm-hmm. Dale.
Not that those 8 murders, especially of the babies, that was so vile, that right. wouldn't be hostile at all.
The police and both attorneys kept away from names of the victims. They would only say, like, young girl, a dismembered body, young body.
I guess that's to of a boy. Protect the minor, the name, the minor.
Maybe, but this was making the jury really confused. There were so many victims. On day 6, they brought in the letter that he wrote to the Mounties, mm-hmm. quoting phrases like, they had dogs tracking me, I heard a Mountie calling me to surrender. And those phrases showed that Dale knew what was going on around him. The pathologist assigned to Kathy St. Armand was called. He said that the cause of Kathy's death could have been one of 2 things. One could have been the knife, the 8-inch knife wound in her back, or the other would have been the skull fracture with the hammer. Mm. He noted that Kathy was also cut from her sternum all the way to her pubic arch, about 9 inches long. And the cut was just to the abdominal wall, so none of the organs came out, but the bowels protruded through the wounds.
Yeah.
Also, the little girl's anus was found abnormally dilated with tears inside the anal canal. Note, just wanted to say that the prosecution actually used the term buggery.
What?
Instead of anal penetration, they used buggery.
You don't have to clarify.
I know,
but I'm just kind of shocked. That's a slang term.
It is.
Traditionally, but a British slang term.
Well, they didn't get the cunnilingus, so I guess they had to slum it down. Yeah. Since there was a lack of blood, he said that this would only have happened post-mortem or just right before death.
I'd like to say I'm shocked, but I'm not.
Listen to this.
If you're going to gross me out, I need a warning.
No. This jury, I'm telling you. The defense then asked the pathologist if any semen was found and if he could explain what semen was to the jury.
Say what? Explain that again?
The defense lawyer asked the pathologist if the pathologist had found any semen on or in Kathy. Then the defense asked the pathologist to explain what semen was to the jury.
How old was this jury? Like 12?
I can't tell you. There's every aspect of this case.
I would almost call a mistrial on this because this
shocking.
Is definitely not a jury of your peers. And not just.
Unless everybody in the 70s were just not educated.
Sexual revolution was in the 60s, girl. Where you be? You should know. You lived through that. You were a teenager back then.
Mm-hmm.
Bam.
I was actually 30. The pathologist explained what the semen was. And that there had not been any found around or inside her body. So, and listen to this. Prosecution asked the doctor if he thought that semen would be able to be found after 48 hours. And the doctor said unless it was in low temperature, semen wouldn't last for more than 24 hours. Now, did they not know?
They knew about that then. Are you kidding?
They had to have. And was it just maybe that the semen wasn't alive? Like the sperm wasn't allowed? It's still there. I know. That's... Isn't
shocked.
It's weird,
I'm
isn't
shocked.
It's
that's why this totally should have been a mistrial, only because I would almost
well now it would be a not, mistrial, but
and not to be pro Dale because he does not deserve a decent trial. But on the other hand, I'd be almost afraid that they weren't smart enough to convict him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, all right. I'm getting all fired up.
It's amazing. This case is just beyond
shocking.
Anything.
It is shocking.
So now, of course, with all this, the jurors are downright angry and they're like glaring at Dale and Dale. All he did is just sat there and he was ashamed and he kept his head down. He didn't even look
so
at make
felt,
out contact.
He felt remorse, obviously.
He felt remorse.
So he knows what he did.
Up until now, this was the prosecution's side of the trial. You know, they go back and forth. Mm-hmm. Bolton Coulthard had shown without a reasonable doubt that Dale had committed the murders, which we knew that. He had called 29 witnesses and entered 42 pieces of evidence. And remember, even Debbie, the oldest daughter that ran, was brought to the stand, and she was questioned, and they even brought Charlene, poor little Charlene. Sorry. They made sure that she wasn't asked about anything inappropriate.
Did she have to sit in front of him? Was he in the courtroom with her? Oh, hell no.
Even with all these witnesses and all this evidence, the only thing that the prosecution didn't do was give a reason why Dale would have done these things. And that's what the defense attorney was hoping for. The defense attorney, Moran, started day 7 with telling the jury that they had 4 options, 4 verdicts they could give. They could do guilty as charged, guilty but lesser verdict of manslaughter, not guilty reason of insanity, or not guilty on both counts. He told the jury that he couldn't ask them to acquit Dale, but the only reasonable thing for them to do was to find him guilty by reason of insanity. No. Day 7, the defense called Dr. Holliday. He's the one that interviewed Dale while he was in Vancouver. Dr. Holliday told the jury how Dale had showed signs of depression, had a history of depression, and with some of his depression attacks being so severe that he had to be hospitalized. He even received electroshock therapy.
Oh, he did.
While he was in these therapy sessions. Therapy sessions, I said, with finger quotation marks.
He had never had electric shock therapy prior to committing these murders, has he?
Yeah, was sent while he was in the hospital for severe depression.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, he was hospitalized and given electroshock therapy.
I mean, I know that changes the chemistry of your brain. I'm just wondering if that had anything to do with it.
Dr. Holliday even told about the suicide attempts that Dale had had, told the jury how Dale was aggressive when he drank, was very mean. Dr. Holliday also told the jury how Dale was aggressive when he drank, but sometimes he was mean even when he hadn't been drinking. And Dale had feelings of rejection in his childhood, and then later he felt rejected by his wife's family.
Oh, okay.
And he told the jury.
There's the reason. Okay.
Dr. Holliday also said how Dale had had difficulties in relationships with females, even feeling hatred towards them. And then Dr. Holliday brought up how Dale felt he was sexually impotent and could only perform while drunk, and even stated that Dale admitted to him that he had engaged in various sexual deviant acts through the years.
Ooh, like
including incidents with young girls.
Oh, God.
Dr. Holliday brought up that Dale's marriage was also falling apart. They had been in a huge fight due to the fact that Dale had gotten a vasectomy and did not tell his wife, Annette. Annette had then accused him of assault and actually had him charged with assault. And then she asked him to leave the house, the home. When asked if drinking alcohol could have affected his state of mind that night, Dr. Holliday said that drinking supports his conclusion that he had a disease of the mind. The doctor was then asked if Dale had taken LSD. The doctor said taking LSD, it's known and accepted that sometimes the people that do take it have an irrational behavior change and that it can be associated with suicide and homicide cases. They asked a lot more questions about LSD uses, all the bizarre things that Dale was standing trial for. And basically, Dr. Holliday stated anybody that behaves the way Dale did that Friday night, they were insane. When the prosecution came up to talk to Dr. Holliday, they brought up sexual deviants or sex perverts, as they called. He asked them if sexual deviancy was a sign of a diseased mind. And trust me, this was, I bet you, 15 pages of the book going back and forth of them talking about it. Prosecution finally got the doctor to say that sexual deviancy or perversity is a personality disorder and not a mental illness. Prosecution went on to ask the doctor tons of hypothetical questions. And totally lost the jury. I mean, it's just so over the jury's head that it couldn't.
I can't believe the judge let that keep going because that's totally, it's just, it's not important to what's going on.
And none of this was explained to the jury at all. They just went and they spoke in their college degrees and the jury just sat there not knowing anything. Nothing was explained.
What constitutes deviant behavior? Because you know what? Oral sex used to be deviant and it's not. We know him and his thing, but as a juror, and we already know the caliber of the jury. This is way above them.
Right. It's totally beyond them. And honestly, reading like these 15 pages, I was getting confused and I had to go back and reread things and try to clarify things. And they were getting into deep.
But see, then
this is the prosecution. You would think the prosecution wouldn't want to lose your jury. On the last 2 days of the trials, day 8 and 9, the other two psychiatrists were brought up to the stand. Both psychiatrists told the jury that they diagnosed Dale with a sociopathic disorder with antisocial behavior, which is a personality disorder, but he was sane at the time of the murders.
And that's what I've been saying. He definitely had some mental disorders.
Issues.
However, he knew what he was doing.
The doctors kind of were stuck because they agreed that within the terms of the Mental Health Act of British Columbia, Dale was insane. But unfortunately, they had a legal obligation to say that he was sane in the legal sense. The legal sense is person is either very low IQ or that the person does not understand the nature or quality of the act or that the nature or quantity of the act is wrong. That's the legal sense. This Mental Health Act is someone suffering from a disease of the mind that seriously impairs his ability to react appropriately to his environment or with others, and or requires medical treatment or supervision to protect themselves or others from harm. So in the mental health sense, he was insane, in the legal sense,
right. He
was sane.
Yeah. I know there's a slippery slope there because of how many people do things and then they try to plead that they were insane at the time.
Right.
And when you think about it, if you murder somebody, that is insane. That is not normal. However, to be criminally insane is a whole nother thing.
Like exactly.
It's actually quite hard to prove.
Just another side note for this jury. The attorneys were going back and forth questioning the doctor. And one of the words in this sentence, the defense says, "Do you agree that the accused acts of self-preservation, running away, hiding, do not negate the possibility of insanity?" Ordered. That was the question. On the ninth day, the last day before court started, the foreman came to the judge and said, "We have a question." Jurors asked the judge what the word negate meant. Big kudos to the judge because he handled it very professionally with grace. He actually had somebody go search the courthouse looking for a dictionary so he could read out the correct definition.
Not to mention they should have had that all along, the dictionary, those poor people. I don't even know what to say.
I know. But negate. Even if you don't know what the word is.
Context clues. This is the teacher.
Exactly.
Context clues. Look at the words before it and the words after it.
Well, not even that, but negate, negate. What else could it be? Negative?
Even in the sentence, you can figure it out.
But
that's just mistrial.
But I mean, if the jury didn't know what negate was, how were they supposed to understand these psychiatric testimonies? How were they?
Thank you.
Sociopathic disorder? How would they know that? They wouldn't know any of it.
And it also makes me wonder because all the people on the jury, there's probably other words that they didn't know what it meant and they were too shy or embarrassed to say it.
Right.
These are the ones that somebody obviously came forward with and then it was discussed.
Well, all of them did not know what it was.
That's
or
what I'm
two
saying.
People
but
knew
you know, there's
and they
other
thought
words and nobody said anything.
The defense with his closing statement played up the bizarre killing of Tracy Wozniak and how Dale didn't plan to kill these people. It just kind of happened. And since Dale really didn't have a reason for doing it, then he must be insane. He stated, "Dale Merle Nelson cannot go free. You must jail him, but jail him as the truth indicates, as a sick, sick, sick man."
I'm going to say no, no, no. Put him in regular jail.
Bolton Colthurst, the prosecution, then stood up for his closing statement and told the jury to ignore Moran's plea to lock up the sick, sick, sick man. Dale did have reason to kill people, and that reason is they stood in the way of his sexual perversions. And the reason was...
Yeah, but he was being a pervert earlier and didn't have to kill people. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that for a second. And you know, he had it in his mind to go kill those one people, leave the house, and then go to another. Any second during that time, wouldn't you...
I think he went to the first house with the intention to rape.
I think he went to
And
his,
then it went a little bit too far.
Was it his sister-in-law?
Yeah.
It was the McKay? I think he went there.
To rape.
And then chickened out or something, and then he went
Well, the guy was there. He saw that there was another guy there, or he heard them talking. On day 10, Judge Aiken spoke with the jury, and he reviewed all the evidence. He told the jurors about details of the law and the law's interpretation and of Dale's behavior. Like, does drinking or taking drugs mean he couldn't form an intent to kill? Then he shouldn't be guilty of murder, but manslaughter. He then told them that the law's version of insanity is very complicated, and the lack of willpower does not put a person within legal definition of insanity. The judge spoke for 6 hours about this case.
No way.
Yes.
To the jury?
Yes.
Jury instruction was 6 hours, over 6 hours?
6 hours. Then before the jury retired, he reminded them of the 4 alternative verdicts. And then he ended up stating, "I venture this opinion that this is manslaughter or not guilty by reason of insanity." And of course, the defense was beside themselves.
Well, also, you have to take into consideration that that jury had so much trouble with words. Looking at a judge, this irks me. This is like using that power, that position power.
Mm-hmm.
The people that they're going to look to him and, oh, he says that. Oh, okay. I mean, he's a judge. He knows what we should say. He knows what we should think.
Right.
It's just like, you know, older people with their doctors. Well, he's a doctor. He knows what he's... They're also human, right? Like, they're fallible.
The defense knew that if the jury found Dale guilty, Dale wouldn't appeal. And basically, he would be sent to a penitentiary for life.
Good.
With a chance of parole at 10 years.
Nope. He killed.
With a chance of parole, not meaning that he would get parole, but with a chance of parole. Mm-hmm. If he was guilty by reason of insanity, he would be sent to Riverview Mental Hospital for treatment. And as he progressed, he would face a review board and one day possibly be found sane. Mm-mm. The jury started deliberating at 5:35. At 6, they were back in the courtroom.
5:35 to 6, so 25 minutes.
They were hungry, so they requested dinner. The judge gave them until 7:30 to eat and then back to deliberating.
Can't they deliberate and eat at the same time?
Mm-hmm. By 7:20, all the jury was back for deliberation. By 8:30, a jury foreman knocked on the courtroom door and announced they were ready. They had a verdict. Public, they didn't care anymore. It was done. No, they were just done.
They got the gory details and they were out?
I guess.
On to other things?
You would think that they'd wait for a verdict.
Are you kidding?
Nobody was in the courtroom. It was just pretty much Dale and the jury, not just a skeleton crew, his wife.
It's really sad, actually.
Mm-hmm. Dale stood up, looked at the judge. The judge asked the jury if they had come upon an agreed verdict. The foreman said they had. Justice Akins then asked, "Do you find the prisoner Dale Merle Nelson guilty or not guilty?" The foreman answered, "Guilty."
I was worried.
Justice Akins then asked if Dale would like to say a few words before sentencing, and Dale said no. Then the judge sentenced Dale to life in prison, and Dale slowly and calmly walked out of the courtroom. Dale died of throat cancer in 1999 while still in prison. He is cremated, and his ashes whereabouts are unknown. All this information was from a book called Limits of Sanity by Larry Sills. He was a reporter for the Vancouver Sun.
I think you promoted that in our first episode. However,
I just wanted to remind everybody.
I also was going to say that you would be happy to sell it to them because it cost you how much?
It was a lot of money. Yeah. I will probably put it up on eBay to try to recoup some of the money. Unreal, isn't it?
I'm flabbergasted that the jury was that ignorant. Mm-hmm. And I use that as in the uneducated sense, not the teenager word.
Right.
That they were unaware of that. And that's frightening.
It's very frightening because you know that happens now.
And I don't think drugs would do that. I think he definitely had a mental illness. I mean, how many people are mentally ill? How many Americans or Canadians or Australians?
Now that I have read the book, and I found out that there wasn't really a lot of reporters, mm-hmm. and a lot of people did not know about this crime. Mm-hmm. That's why there's so much misinformation on the internet.
About this
book. Yeah. Because as I was researching this, nothing.
You couldn't find it. That's why you had to buy the book, right?
I had to buy the book because everybody had a different story. Everybody had different.
Like, give me just because I'm nosy, as a for instance, like what was something that was adamantly different than what they
said. A lot of them said that he had raped the girl. A lot of them said that, or some say that.
But he did, didn't he? Anally rape her, didn't he?
We don't know. It could have been the bottle next to her.
Oh, Jesus.
Because remember, he's impotent.
Oh, God. Oh, and he didn't leave semen. Well, that I did think that was weird that he is one.
But there was just so many different views of this that I wanted to get the only true source. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's it.
That was really shocking. By far and away, our most gruesome case, wouldn't you say? Awful,
yeah. Trust me, it's left me sleepless, and it bothers me a lot. Okay. It's one of those things that's going to be very hard to get, to forget. Because, I mean, my daughter's the same age as Debbie. Very difficult.
Well, thank you, Jen, as always. Yeah. Nicely done, well-researched. If you like our podcast, please listen to iTunes or Podbean or Stitcher, anywhere that you catch all your favorite podcasts.
Please
give
subscribe.
Us a review, either or, we'll take it. We'd love to give shout outs to you if you leave Jen, because she loves people. She loves her people. Make sure you're on our list for the next time. If you would like to catch us, you can catch us on Facebook. We have Facebook. We try to keep it updated. We're getting a little bit better at that. You can hit us on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod.
Talk to me. I love to talk to people. I love people. Call me Collect.
Jen is annoying. You can be her friend and see what that's about. You can't get out of a restaurant in under 3 hours, so she's got to talk to everybody, including the waiters. You can hit us up on Gmail at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. And we have a website, www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. We also air our episodes on there if you want to catch us. We're on YouTube, Spotify.
We are basically anywhere you go to download your podcasts. Any podcatchers will help us. Pretty much, we should be everywhere. If we're not, let us know. We'll get on there.
So, remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Oh, bye-bye.
Love ya. He noticed that a plastic window. No, that doesn't work either.
Bet you if you had a beer, this would be going really good. totally kidding.
I didn't take my meds this morning.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, you're so much more fun when you do.
I know, sorry. That he was alive, but he was sleeping. So I guess he's a snorer. I don't know. On his back.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Wonder if he was sawing logs.
He was sawing logs. He is a lumberjack. Dale did not bulge. Dale did not budge.
That one caught me on crime. I'm sorry. I won't laugh. Okay.
But he didn't know if he'd... Hold on. That didn't even sound right. I must have been stoned when I wrote this.
Must be on LSD.
I must have been on LSD. Dale was interrogated. I'm going to just start that whole thing.
Just start it over, girl, right at the top. Just take a deep breath. See, you got all this stuff going on in your mind because you're all worried about all that.
I know.
Just take a deep breath. It's all about me right now. Right now. Focus right now. Right. Like...
Okay, are you done? With a fire extinguisher. Once Dale had been arrested and brought into the
Jessica
station...
Jessica Savage always used to do this.
No, well, she's a drama queen.
She died.
Yeah. But that's why she died?
No, she just died.
Okay.
I don't want to ask this on air because it sounds stupid, but do they have, if you can't afford an attorney?
That's one, legal aid.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Don't put that on air because I sound a little dumb. Uh-huh. Sound like a big dummy. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
I'm replying to Glenn Think's stuff because he put something about Justin Bieber and it's really funny.
Glenn thinks you're smart.
I am smart.
And undergoed.
He undergoed it.
Well, he's dead, so.
Well, and he's a severe murderer, but other than that, I bet you he's got a nice personality.
Yeah. He's easy to talk to. He's a good drinking buddy.
Murder.
I know, it's
family,
more like Stefan
children.
From Saturday Night Live. Yeah. This case has everything.
It's true.
I have been getting so many goddamn phone calls.
Me too, and guess what? I went on do not whatever list so many times. It didn't help.
No.
It doesn't help. It used to help.
No, it doesn't, and it's not. And then this is the same one that calls about, help us pay off your student loans. I don't fucking have student loans. I don't mispronounce things. I slur words.
There you go, you slur.
Yeah. She struggled. What are you doing?
I'm taking a selfie because I'm sitting in the shelf because I can't talk to her. She's calling me. Go ahead.
And everybody said that Dan, why do I keep calling him Dan? He barely was on the stand when the judge called a voir dire. How do we pronounce that?
Voyeur?
No, the voir dire, where the sidebar. Call him up to the sideboard. We, at Crime Con, we went to it. The voir dire. We left because it was boring.
Can't you just say sidebar? Because everybody knows what sidebar is. Or you can be smart and
gonna do
what we're talking about. Because sometimes it does amaze me when you sound smart. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we say things. And we're like, huh, kind of smart sometimes.
Var deer.
Is that French?
Okay. Prosecution. And you have to remember, too, that Dan was supposed to be impotent, so he wouldn't have been...
He's important? I don't think he's very important.
Yeah, impotent. Not omnipotent, but impotent.
Impotent.
Yeah. It's impotent. I put impotent.
I'm not a doctor.
I don't know.
And I don't play one on TV or on the podcast.
Well,
I'm
and you haven't
wondering.
Stayed in the Holiday Inn for a while either.
And I have
so.
Not, you're right.
I even looked up some words, like, because I wasn't getting,
like,
seriously.
Like impotent.
And
or impotent.
And bitch. Yeah. Was negate. He had to tell the jury about the intricacies. I can't even say it. Tell about the
intricacies. Sometimes you can't look at the
I
word.
Know.
Think it. Just say it. Don't look at the word. Intricacies. It's better that way. Intricacies.
Tell the jurors about the intricacies. I still can't say it.
I was waiting for you to. The little facts.
The little details. That's what I was going to say.